Picture this. You've put in the work, blood, sweat, tears, building a comprehensive parts catalog for your business, and then a former employee decides to go rogue, starts a competing company. And what do? They use a practically identical catalog.
Oh, that's gonna sting.
Talk about a punch to the gut.
Right. This actually happened. This is the case of ATC Distribution Group versus whatever. It takes transmissions and parts, and it throws some really interesting questions out there about what copyright law actually protects.
You know, this case is a great example. It really dives into what makes a compilation, like a catalog, copyrightable in the first place.
Okay, so let's break this down. We've got ATC selling transmission parts. They decide to sue their former employee, Kenny Hester, and his new company, WITT-ATC's argument. WITT straight up copied their entire catalog, the structure, the part numbers, even the illustrations.
Yeah, they didn't mess around. ATC hit WITT with a ton of claims. Copyright infringement, unfair competition, breach of fiduciary duty, the whole shebang.
Wow, the kitchen sink approach. So what went wrong for ATC? Did their catalog even have a valid copyright? Well, that's where things get tricky. You got to understand originality. That's the key. Catalogs are compilations of facts, and compilations can be copyrighted. But there's a catch.
Okay, I'm listening.
They have to show a modicum of creativity in how the information is selected and arranged. This all goes back to a landmark case, Feist Publications versus Rural Telephone Service. It really set the precedent for how we look at these kinds of compilations.
So just making a list of parts and numbers, that's not enough.
You got it. The court in this case really dissected ATC's catalog. They were looking for that modicum of creativity, and it's here where things get interesting. So let's start with the structure. ATC claimed their way of sorting parts, like separating O-rings from sealing rings, was unique and therefore copyrightable.
But isn't that just standard practice in the industry?
That's exactly what the court thought. They saw this categorization as purely functional, not creative. It's like organizing your kitchen. You put the spices together, the baking supplies together. Practical. Yes, creative expression, not so much.
So no bonus points for practicality in copyright law. Gotcha. What about those part numbers? ATC used a sequential numbering system. They even left gaps for parts they might add in the future.
Right. Seems pretty smart. But again, the court saw this as just common sense organization, more like assigning serial numbers than showing creative authorship. Would you try to copyright your numbered to-do list?
I think I'd lose that case pretty quickly.
Exactly. And then there were the illustrations. You'd think those would be protected, right?
Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty straightforward.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
But originality is what we're looking for. And here's where it gets a little awkward for ATC, their illustrations. Well, they were copied straight from a competitor's catalog. The court called them slavish copies, said there was zero originality there.
Ouch. That's gotta hurt. So their copyright claim was already on shaky ground, but ATC also threw in all those other claims, like unfair competition. Did any of those stick?
Ah, well, now we're getting into even murkier waters because of something called preemption. Basically, federal copyright law trumps state law claims when those state claims are really just copyright claims in disguise.
So it's like they got told they couldn't use the front door. So they tried sneaking in through the back.
Perfect analogy. And that's what tripped ATC up. The court tossed out their claims of unfair competition, unjust enrichment, misappropriation. Why? Because they all relied on the argument that WITT copied their catalog. And as we've seen, that catalog wasn't really copyrightable.
So if you're going to lean on a state law claim about someone copying your work, you better make sure that work is actually protected by copyright in the first place.
You got it. And there's one more piece to this puzzle. Remember the merger doctrine?
Remind me.
It basically says if there's only one way to express an idea, then that expression can't be protected by copyright. The idea and expression, well, they merge, hence the name.
Okay. So how does that fit into the ATC case?
Well, remember those part numbers with the gaps for future parts? ATC was claiming their system was original, but the court said, look, leaving gaps for future entries is so basic and functional that there's only one logical way to do it.
So they can't copyright something that's just common sense.
Right. It'd be like trying to copyright the alphabet. It's too fundamental. The court knew if they let someone monopolize a basic system like that, it would stifle innovation and competition. Nobody wants that.
That this is really making me rethink what original actually means in the eyes of the law.
Yeah.
So we've established ATC's copyright claim was weak. What about those other claims they made, like breach of fiduciary duty?
Let's dive into those next. This case is a real cautionary tale. It has some important lessons for anyone creating and protecting intellectual property.
Okay, so we still have those other claims to unpack.
Yeah.
ETC also went after WITT for breach of fiduciary duty, saying Kenny Hester and those other former employees violated some kind of loyalty by starting a competing business and allegedly copying that catalog.
Yeah, it's an argument you can understand. But the court wasn't convinced. They pointed out that in North Carolina, where this all went down, salespeople don't typically have a fiduciary duty to their employers.
So even though those employees were in a position of trust selling ATC's products, that relationship wasn't enough to create a fiduciary duty.
Exactly. Fiduciary duty usually comes up in situations with a really special relationship, like a doctor and patient or a lawyer and client. That level of trust just isn't there in a typical salesperson-employer relationship. At least that's what the court said.
That makes sense. It feels like ATC was trying to use this fiduciary duty argument to make up for their weak copyright claims.
Mm-hmm.
What about interference with business relations? Did ATC have any luck with that?
Not really. ATC claimed that WITT was interfering with their existing customer relationships. But to win on that kind of claim, they needed to prove WITT used some shady or illegal tactics to steal those customers away.
So just offering a similar product at a better price, that's not enough to prove interference.
Nope. The court didn't find any evidence that WITT was doing anything unethical or illegal, like stealing trade secrets, making false claims about ATC, or tricking customers. In the court's view, WITT was playing by the rules, just competing fairly.
This case really shows how important it is to understand business law, especially when you're talking about competition and intellectual property. So what are the bigger implications for businesses and creators? Is the lesson here that you need super strict contracts to protect yourself from something like this?
Well, that's definitely one of the takeaways. This case shows how valuable strong employment agreements are, especially non-compete clauses. If they're enforceable, that is.
So if ATC had a solid non-compete agreement with Kenny Hester, they might have been able to stop him from starting a competing business in the first place.
It's possible. A valid non-compete could have limited what Hester could do, like using ATC's confidential information or going after their customers. But enforcing non-competes, well, that depends a lot on what state you're in.
Another layer of complexity. It seems like businesses need to be proactive and talk to their lawyers to make sure their agreements are airtight and follow the laws in their state.
Couldn't agree more. And this case gives us some really useful insights into how copyright law is changing.
I'm all ears. What else can we learn from ATC's mistakes?
Well, this case shows a trend that's been growing in copyright law. Courts are less and less likely to protect things that are purely functional or practical. Even if someone put a lot of work into creating them, the focus is shifting more and more towards originality and creativity.
So even if a company spends tons of time and money developing a system, it might not be copyrightable if it's mainly functional.
That's the key. There's a really interesting case, Practice Management Information Corporation versus American Medical Association, that shows this.
Okay, lay it on me. I love a good legal analogy.
In that case, a company tried to copyright medical billing codes. You know, those complicated numerical codes used to bill for procedures. They said they put a lot of work into making that system, so they deserved copyright protection. Sound familiar?
Definitely reminds me of ATC and their arguments about their parts catalog.
Right, but the court in the practice management case said, look, those codes are complicated, sure, but they're fundamentally functional. They're essential for healthcare transactions, not creative expressions. So no copyright protection.
So just because something takes effort and is complicated doesn't mean it's automatically copyrightable.
Mm-hmm.
It needs that extra something, that creative spark that sets it apart from just a functional system.
Exactly. And that brings us right back to ATC and their parts catalog. They were focused on practicality and efficiency. Great for running a business, but not enough for copyright protection.
Okay, so let's play devil's advocate. What if ATC had gone about their catalog differently? What if they went beyond just listing parts and numbers?
Now you're talking. That's where things could have gotten interesting. Imagine if ATC had added unique content, like detailed troubleshooting guides written in a really distinctive style, or maybe funny anecdotes about common transmission problems, or even original illustrations with a cool artistic look.
Now their catalog is more than just a basic parts list.
Right. Now they've added creativity. The catalog becomes more than just a tool, maybe even fun to read.
And that could have made their copyright claim much stronger.
You bet. It all comes back to that modicum of creativity standard. By adding those unique touches, ATC could have argued that their catalog wasn't just facts, it was a creative work, and it deserved copyright protection.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive into copyright law. So what's the final word on the ATC case? And what are the big takeaways for our listeners?
Let's wrap this up and talk about those key lessons learned.
So tell me, what was the final verdict? Did the court throw the book at WITT?
Well, not quite the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. It actually agreed with the lower court's decision.
So it was a win for WITT.
Total victory. All those claims ATC made, copyright infringement, unfair competition, breach of fiduciary duty, they all went down in flames. The court said ATC's catalog just wasn't original enough to be protected. And those other claims, well, some were preempted by copyright law and some just didn't hold water.
Sounds like ATC walked away with a pretty expensive lesson in copyright law.
You could say that. And this isn't some weird one-off case. It's part of a bigger trend. Courts are getting really careful about giving protection to things that are just functional or practical, even if someone put a lot of work into them. What matters now is originality and creative expression.
So what does this mean for our listeners? A lot of them are lawyers, right? Or studying to be lawyers.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway here?
I think the biggest lesson here is that in copyright law, creativity always beats effort. You can't just put in a ton of time and energy making something. If you want copyright protection, it has to have that special something, something that makes it unique, something that sets it apart from just a basic functional thing.
So copyright law, it's really about encouraging and protecting creative works, not just effort or investment.
Exactly. Remember when we talked about ATC adding those troubleshooting guides or those funny little stories? If they'd done that, they might have had a much stronger argument for copyright protection.
So picture this. You're a lawyer. A client comes in. They want to copyright a catalog or a database or a set of instructions. What's the first question you should be asked?
Well, you got to figure out what makes it truly special,
right?
What's that creative spark? What lifts it above just a plain, ordinary, functional thing?
Great questions. And I think this case also shows us how state and federal law can clash. When it comes to intellectual property, you have to understand preemption and how it affects those state law claims, especially when they start looking a lot like copyright claims. This has been a fascinating deep dive, and I'll admit, when we started talking about a parts catalog, I wasn't expecting to get so into it, but this case is full of surprises. It makes you think about copyright originality and how the law is changing to keep up with the times.
It just goes to show, even in the most ordinary things, like a parts catalog, you can find these fascinating legal puzzles, and they can really make you think about what it means to be creative and how innovation happens.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And to everyone listening out there, whether you're a seasoned lawyer or just starting your legal journey, always remember, copyright law, it's constantly evolving, so stay curious, keep learning, and never underestimate the power of creativity. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.